This is
Good Morning Ottawa. This is The Goods with Dahlia Kurtz on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Ready?
We're live.
We clear?
It's showtime!
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl.
Hello and a good morning to you. I'm Dahlia. It's 10:06. It's 3 degrees heading up to when you're going up one more degree. All right. So now you know what it's going up to, you math whiz you. So before the end of the show, you're going to meet Dynamite Girl. We're not saying her name because we want to give her that respect, but she's 13. She is Dynamite Girl because of the way she has fought back against bullies, but the way that she has been assaulted at school, has been spat on in the face, she says, by a boy who then proceeds to go high-five his friends. This is during COVID, mind you, a pandemic. High-fives his friends, and then an investigation proceeds with the school. They interrogate a 13-year-old child with intellectual disabilities for 2.5 hours and then want her to come back for an interrogation with the principal and the vice principal without a police officer or without her parents' presence? Unbelievable. So she's going to be joining us before the end of the show, Dynamite Girl, who is Dynamite and loves BTS. So, of course, we're calling her Dynamite Girl. And I really hope that some of her bullies, and I include Holy Trinity School and its administration in as those bullies after I heard from her parents how she was treated, I really hope that some of her bullies hear what happens. Because bullies, this is what you ended up getting, that person that you don't seem to like very much. Now, I want to get to my next guest because she's looking at feminism in a different way. Has feminism been stripped from a movement and turned into a product? My next guest definitely has a lot to say on that, considering she has literally written the book on it. In her latest book, she examines the state of modern feminism in Canada and says it needs to be taken back from politicians, business leaders, and journalists who distort and obscure its power. She's written for The Washington Post, amongst other publications. She's the editor of the Canadian Association of Labor Media and author of the new book, Take Back the Fight, Organizing Feminism for the Digital Age, Nora Laurito. Good morning.
Good morning.
Someone called you the face of third wave feminism. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I don't think I am. third wave feminism, it refers to the feminist tendencies that emerged in the early 1990s that rejected the previous waves of feminism that far too often ignored racialized women, low-income women, queer women, women with disabilities, indigenous women, the women who weren't white, able-bodied, and often middle class, who so often were the recognized leaders of feminist movements. And third wave feminism brought a lot of voices into spaces that they had been excluded from, right? Voices of women activists, of feminist activists who had always been doing that kind of work, but who were not given the recognition or who were actively pushed out or erased from stories from earlier forms of feminist action in the 1970s. And then, of course, much earlier, if we think of Canada, of women fighting for the vote, but, of course, not for all women, right? Not for Indigenous women, not for other kinds of women. And so what I try to do with this book is I actually don't talk too much about the waves, but instead looking at where the feminist movement is now in Canada and how interesting it is that there's a lot of online feminist action, that the word is not, it's not a bad word for a vast majority of people, And so not bad that we have a prime minister that announces that he's a feminist, but things are not necessarily getting better for women. And actually, in a lot of ways, they're getting worse.
You know, I want to hear your take on this, because I'll give you my take that has absolutely nothing substantive to it, because I am not a writer on feminism. But I feel like we have lived through this incredible moment of the internet that is growing and growing and growing. And the web, Twitter, TikTok, what have you, it makes people feel empowered, right? They get to share their voice. And more often than not, I feel like it's a vanity voice. It's one that gets likes, shares, retweets, and one that's treated essentially like a product. But this product is really belonging to the owners of that platform, like TikTok or Twitter or Facebook. And so you feel like you've contributed to a movement, and it gives you this sense of accomplishment. And you could be an e-activist, but you don't have to really apply that and execute that in other ways. And then all of a sudden, you don't do anything else to fight this fight you're talking about. And you can say all of these bad things about whomever you want, to say how your power has been taken away from you and you're trying to get it back. And they're just sitting there laughing because all you've done is a tweet and you have 600 retweets and you feel good about it, but they're still sitting there untouched, unscathed.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly the phenomenon that I wanted to explore in this book. Exactly. And I think that it's really important to recognize that the individual who's doing that tweet, let's say, who's expressing themselves, who's trying to identify injustice, it's not their fault that Facebook and Twitter and Instagram have become these incredibly massive corporations that are not going to be the things that we're able to demand change through, but that through a whole bunch of forces, political forces, economic forces, we don't know any other way to get active very often. Like, other than those hardcore activists who are doing work in the streets, or the folks who are working within the shelter system or are still, you know, fighting for childcare, the vast majority of people don't actually know where to turn to take those actions that they express, the politics they express online, the condemnations, the statements. How do you actually turn that into a thing that is powerful? And I think that people just don't know the history. You know, they don't know that for abortion to be made legal in this country, it took opening literal illegal abortion clinics. That Dr. Henry Morgenthaler and the activists around his clinics broke the law. You know, Morgenthaler was arrested, and to actually get that moment turned into law took an incredible amount of mobilization from feminists across this country, and there were confrontations. The confrontations were violent sometimes. And, it, you know, in the end, 1988, the Supreme Court undid all of Canada's abortion legislation. And we don't really feel, I think, anymore the need to have those kinds of confrontation, whether that's in the street, whether that's direct confrontation with politicians. And instead, what we have is we actually have federal politicians that will march in women's marches saying, yeah, I'm a feminist as well. And it's like there's a difference between a politician who says that they're a feminist and a feminist politician that's putting forward feminist policies. And I read about this in the book. Even the most like dedicated feminists who find themselves in politics often get stopped because of how many barriers and how much opposition there is to putting forward things like a national child care program or, you know, more supports for victims of gendered violence or survivors of gendered violence. And that's because what it requires is not a feminist politician getting into politics. It really does require that confrontation in the street. And so I look at Me Too, and as you say, there's a lot of power, you know, individual power in saying your part, expressing yourself online, but to then turn that into action that will scare a politician, that's the missing link that I explore in the book. And that's what I hope to talk to people about, that missing link is real life organizing, the really hard work of building relationships with people in real life, right, off of these platforms, and finding those pressure points that we can build confrontation towards.
If you're just joining, I'm Dahlia. I'm having a conversation on The Goods with Nora Laredo, whose new book, Take Back the Fight, is looking at feminism in a different way right now. Has this been stripped from a movement and turned into a product? Two things that you bring up, Nora, and I'll touch on the first one very quickly, and then I'll get to the second point. You talked about how the illegal things had to happen in order for the women's movement to help progress in policy. And I just shared the story the other week about how in Philadelphia, in order to get housing for people, a whole organization had to mobilize and mobilize many people into doing something very illegal, squatting in vacant homes until the government decided to say, yes, we can give these vacant homes that we have here while people are sleeping on the streets. We can give these vacant homes to these people who have nowhere to live. But they had to first do something illegal, and they had to squat in those homes, and they had to mobilize lots of people. It wasn't about a tweet and it wasn't about a retweet. So it's just interesting how you bring that up right now, because that's exactly how you see change is not happening with just tweets, and how change happens when people actually gather. And Twitter, even though it seems to have empowered people and emboldened people because they can share their voice, they're not really sharing actions anymore, and they get satisfied too easily in their voice. But the other thing you mentioned too, I think a lot of these movements are getting false validation and false praise from places like Twitter with a hashtag like MeToo. Because while it's valuable in its efforts and it's great to have women's voices coming out, what people failed to acknowledge is that it became a trend where a lot of Hollywood celebrities, for instance, could come out and talk about these things that they experienced. But somebody who's just working in a store, let's say down the street or in a business office right here, it doesn't work the same way for them. They can't. They risk their jobs and their lives. And you look at people who came out against Django Meshi, and everybody applauded these women for coming forward. And while people online were sharing these hashtags and applauding these women for coming forward, today those women are having a very difficult time getting employment. So how do you see this side of things when we don't quite get the full picture, because we'll see a lot of retweets, but we're not seeing what the people themselves are going through as a result of it?
Yeah. The problem with how social media has reconfigured how we understand our place in society is that it's very individualized. And so we all exist through an avatar, and that avatar might be very popular. Let's say you have a lot of followers, right? And that's everyone's goal, is to rise above all the other avatars in their followers. And the problem with conceptualizing society like that is it means that the way that we fight, let's say, sexualized violence in the workplace is that you call out the name of the sexual abuser in your workplace. And when you do that, you obviously get in trouble, because that person is probably someone who you work with. They probably have power over you. You could easily get fired. It's as if you look at a workplace health and safety issue, and to try and change a workplace health and safety issue requires one person to say, this is unsafe. It's like, no, your boss is going to fire you if you're the one person that's standing up and saying this is unsafe. This is the reason why, for centuries, the only way that we've actually made any progress in society is through collective action, is through looking at those systemic ways that violence against gendered violence within society it expresses itself. And there's always a pattern. It's always, you know, someone who has power over someone else. And so rather than imagining social change happening because that one person is standing up, reclaiming their voice and calling out their abuser, what we actually need is 100 people standing together and saying, we are actually condemning our bosses or this structure that is the one that's perpetuating the violence against us. Because, you know, the way that, the Django Meshi situation is a really good example of how that became about one person. But, you know, the stories that come out of the CBC, it's not one person, and it's not always sexualized violence. We've already heard other stories of racial intimidation, harassment problems within that corporation. And that's not just the CBC. That's widespread within media. That's widespread across corporations. I mean, when that was happening, I had a friend say, wow, I thought it was only the marine biology world that was really abusive towards women. It's like, okay, yeah, no, this is literally everywhere. And so, you know, that's the problem with social media, is because it has been reduced to the individual experience, because every user is more dollar signs, more money for Facebook or for Twitter or whatever. But that is not how social change works. And so we actually need to build communities around people. We need to build communities around workplaces or around issues, or within a community if it's a situation like at city council or town council or whatever. And it's only through building those forms of solidarity, those relationships, that we can actually come up with a campaign that will be strong enough to make sure that in a situation where you have one abuser and you know, let's say 10 survivors or 10 victims, that those 10 people are not the ones that wear the most trauma from the campaign, that there's so many people around them that everybody gets to share into the backlash. And then through everybody being sharing in that backlash, they're able to really absorb the backlash that would otherwise be worn by an individual person.
By Justin Trudeau saying that he's a feminist, has he helped or hurt it?
I think that he's hurt it. I think he's confused it. And the problem is that people like to hear words like that. Like, you know, you want to have a prime minister that's a feminist. You really do want that. But the problem is that his policies are not feminist. I mean, look at the way that the CERB was created, right? You have to make $5,000 last year to get the CERB. So, you know, for any stay-at-home parent that didn't make their money last year, that might be in an abusive situation, they can't get the CERB. They're still dependent on the person who's making more money in their family. And of course, we know that poverty is gendered. And so the people in our society who are more likely to be poor are more likely to be the ones that did not make the money last year to allow them to get the CERB. We're seeing like across the labor market that gendered labor is the most underpaid. People our healthcare system is underpinned by low-waged, racialized working women who are giving their all to try and stem the effects of this pandemic. And at the head of all of this is a prime minister who will say he's a feminist but hasn't done even close to enough to be able to take that label on. And so I hope to cut through a lot of this this rhetoric and quite frankly, you know, propaganda or PR to say, no, this is not what a feminist looks like. A feminist looks like us, all of us who are fighting to try and undo these oppressive structures within society that force women to take lower paid work, that force parents, women parents to stay home, or that force people to hire low paid women workers from other countries to take care of their children because there's no childcare. You know, it's throughout all of society that these problems run very deep. And when the Prime Minister of Canada says he's a feminist, It tries to erase these problems and say, oh, actually, feminism has won. We finally have our prime minister in office.
Nora Laurito, this is not even a surface that we have scratched upon when it comes to your book, Take Back the Fight. If people want to get their hands on it, how can they find it?
You can get it in any bookstore. So I encourage you to check online your local bookstore and order it from them. If you are in a location where you don't have an online bookstore, then you can get it from Fernwood Publishers directly online and you can get it delivered.
Is there a political leader who's doing feminism right?
That's a very good question. I'm very inspired by, in Quebec, a friend of mine who's a member of National Assembly, Catherine Dorion. I think that her feminism is wonderful, and it is inclusive and it's creative. And she is driving the absolute right people completely up the wall with the things that she says and the way that she expresses her politics.
And a true feminist, by the by, just so that people understand, you're not saying that Justin Trudeau isn't a feminist because he's a man. He's not a feminist because he is not acting as though he's a feminist.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, there's how many men in society? 50% of all of society are men. We absolutely need men to figure out their role in these movements. And, you know, it's probably not leading them, just like it shouldn't be white women leading them either. But we absolutely need men to be standing up and speaking out and supporting and funding and being present within meetings and doing tasks.
Well, look, between you and me, I'm 5 feet tall. But if Justin Trudeau can say that he is a feminist, I'm going to just start saying I'm 5'6". Nora Laurito, thank you so much for taking your time to join us today. Her new book, Take Back the Fight, you can find that online. Just Google it. And just ahead, a man who is bringing joy to so many people in our city by talking to people around the world about their joy. And we're going to bring joy to a 13-year-old girl who has been bullied, and she deserves some of that. That is coming up on The Goods. It is 10:25, going up to 4 degrees. It is 4 right now. I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods on 580 CFRA. This world is for some-